Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Life isn't neat. It's messy. It's raw. And it's packed with questions most people are just too scared to ask. I'm Francesca Luca, and this is the show where we strip it bare, crush the safe answers, and confront what really matters. No filters, no excuses, just truth, loud, clear, and undeniable. And now, let's get to it. My guest tonight is Stephanie Kuntz. She's a leading historian and author who spent over 30 years studying marriage, family, and gender roles. She's the author of several influential books, including The Way We Never Were and Marriage, a history which explores how love and partnership have changed across cultures and centuries. Her work has been featured everywhere, from the New York Times to NPR, and she's helped policymakers, educators, and everyday people understand how our personal relationships are shaped by much bigger social forces. But don't worry, she doesn't talk like a textbook. She's here to bust a few myths, share some surprising history, and help us think differently and maybe more clearly about the families we come from and the ones we're creating now. Welcome to you, Stephanie. Thanks so much for joining the show tonight.
My pleasure.
So, Stephanie, a lot of our listeners grew up in the 50s, the 60s, and maybe even the 70s, and many of them remember a time when family life felt more, I don't know, maybe stable, more clear-cut. But you've said that what we think of as a traditional family value or values might not be as traditional as we believe. Can you start by unpacking that a bit?
Well, I think there's two important parts to understanding why people get nostalgic for it and why there are problems with being nostalgic for it. First of all, the 1950s family was not at all traditional. The male breadwinner family was probably the least traditional form of marriage in all of history. And so it was a short-lived experiment, and it's over now. So really, we have to think about whether we really would want to go back to it or could go back to it. The second problem with looking at the families of the 1950s is there were some good things about it. If you were lucky enough to grow up in a family where your mother didn't mind being home, a homemaker, where she actually spent time with you, instead of the fact that we know for a fact that actually homemaker mothers in the 60s actually spent less time interacting with their kids than working mothers do today. But if she was around for you and a base for you, and the father was, neither of them was alcoholics, and there wasn't abuse or incest, it was, and you were white, it was a stable time to grow up, not because the family form was so good, but because it was a different era in terms of the options for people coming out of the Depression and World War II. You had the programs of the New Deal and the Great Society. During the 1950s, the average young man entering the workforce was making three times as much in real wages as his father had at the same age. And you'd come out of a war, wasn't just volunteers, they were draftees. People had the idea that they'd fought in the same war for the same thing, and nobody was getting special privileges. Men's wages were going up. So that was one side of the stability that I understand why people feel nostalgic for. But the other side of the stability of 1950s families was that there were very few options for women who didn't want to get married or who needed to work. The average high school educated, call it man with a high school education, made more than a woman with a college education if they were both working full time. Women felt that they had to get married. The average age of marriage was under 21 because that was the only way they could participate in the boom. And once they were married, they were pretty stuck. There were almost no options to protect people who were being abused. Incest. Incest was sometimes described as sex delinquency, adolescent sex delinquency, when it was heard about. So this was not an idyllic age. There were things that we could learn from, the economic and political policies, but nobody in their right mind would want to go back to the marriage laws and arrangements of that.
Yeah, I don't think so. And may my mother rest in peace. But I remember when she was getting older, and I've been in radio for a long time, and I remember taking my little piece of equipment. She was in rehab. She had fallen or something. I can't remember. But anyway, I decided that I would interview her on her life, and I'm so glad that I did. But some of the things that she told me really surprised me. She said, "What did I ever do with my life but have a bunch of kids?" And know, that was really sad to me. You know, she was just a woman who, she had 8 children. And in many ways, I mean, she, you know, she had a very nice life. I mean, she, my father adored her and she adored my father and they traveled. And, but, you know, I think there was always that piece of her that, you know, as she saw her daughters, because she had 5 of them, and saw them have these vibrant careers, I think that that may have been very difficult for her.
I was 30. If I thought about 50, I thought that is an awful long way away. And I don't really need to think about it. And then I blinked and I'm 50. That's crazy.
Time flies.
I wish I could say that I've done more with my 50 years. My amazing daughter, though, she just made senior partner. Apparently the youngest to ever do so. And she is one tough, brilliant attorney, isn't she?
Who's that? Yes.
Yeah. But I never made it to law school. And I never got to see Paris in the spring. And I never got to stay over in Yellowstone because it was too crowded. Well, no, it's just that I put things off. And I kept putting them off. And I would say, oh, we'll do it next year. And then that next year would come. And I'd say, oh, next year, next year. And I don't want to do that anymore.
And I think that's, you know, was very common that women didn't have, they didn't have the opportunity. They were be fruitful and multiply. So I think what the way my mother would describe it, right? And, you know, and of course, there's another whole element there with the religious thing. And there was no such, in, at least in my family, there was no such thing as birth control. That was not going to be for a Catholic woman, right. A Catholic couple. So that was really, you know, and that's, so that's a sad thing. You know, it's sad. But then there's other sides of it too that, you know, today, you know, it's not so easy necessarily. I mean, it looks like this is great. Women have all the opportunity in the world and they can do what they want and they don't have to get married, but that can still be really difficult. And those ways of thinking do die very hard.
Yes. I'm really glad you mentioned the part about your mother feeling that she'd had a good life and yet it wasn't enough. I have horror stories that would just curl your hair about the kind of marriages that many women did have to put up with. The child abuse rates were much higher. Unexplained children's injuries and deaths were much higher. Domestic abuse fell dramatically once unilateral divorce was introduced. And wives' suicide rates fell dramatically too. So, and we can talk about some of those really strong injustices.
Yeah, let's. I want to.
But it's also important what you just said about your mom. My mom had the same thing. She had worked in World War II as a ship fitter. She was very excited and enjoyed the work and for the first time felt pride. And then when the boys came home, she was fired. And she resented it at first, but then it was like, okay, now we've got the GI Bill. My husband can go back to school. He can support me. I can have a child. And that was okay for a few years. But then she began to really miss the vibrancy of being part of a bigger thing. And I interviewed for one of my books, A Strange Stirring. I interviewed more than 100 women who had read Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique. And over again, they told stories like one who later went back to school and became a sociologist told me that she would sit and she would stand in front of the sink washing the dishes, crying uncontrollably. And she'd say, oh, you're so bad. You must be such a bad person. Why are you feeling so sad? Your mother would have killed for a job, you know, to have a home like this. You're so much better off than she was. And yet she knew that something was missing. Her children were going out and doing fun things. Her husband had a more exciting job. Mm-hmm. She got a glimpse of what it could be if she could go back to school and finish her college. She dropped out of college to support her husband so that he could finish college. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed woman after woman like that. So it's just wrong to say that women were totally happy and satisfied in those days.
And there was a lot of drinking going on in those days, right?
With those
women. And it was quite a time. And you know, and then there was the you know, the women, I don't know, maybe this is out of line to even say so, but I mean, I know that women go through a lot when they go through menopause, but part of me feels like it's a little overdone with the hormones. And I think a lot of it has to do with they have this reckoning with their soul at that point in their life, right? That they're turning whatever it is, 48, 50, 55. Mm-hmm. And then they start to look at their lives and say, what have I done? What have, you know, how have I?
And the kids are gone. What other identity do I have? Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
I think that was true for many women in those days.
Yeah, exactly. So I know that you're writing a book that's coming out in 2026, For Better or For Worse, The Problematic Past and the Challenging Future of Marriage. Can you tell us give us a little sneak peek of what that's about?
It's partly a history, but I've written more straight histories of marriage before. So in this case, what I wanted to do is I wanted to go into two or three or four specific historical periods about which we have tremendous myths, like the myth that marriage was invented to protect women and children because they couldn't feed themselves. Let's go into that, really talk about that. Or other periods when we began to change our ideas about marriage, and we developed habits and institutions and ideas about what makes marriage work that no longer work for us in the modern era. So in a sense, what I'm doing is I'm using the history, and there are fun stories from the history. I mean, I find it quite interesting, and most people I've read who've read little drafts of it say that some of this stuff is interesting. But what's really I feel passionate about is I want to help people say, this is what we need to leave behind us if we want to build the kind of marriages that most people want today. There are things we've learned, that things that men haven't learned, things that women
don't
have
get
learned
us started,
well.
Right?
Well, things that men haven't learned, but what things that women have learned too well, mm-hmm. that we bring to our marriages today, mm-hmm. that interfere with our doing the hard work to build the mutually supportive, equal relationships that most people really want to have.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just veer off for just a second, because I want to ask you, it's so commonplace now for women in the early 50s. I mean, women are just like initiating divorce like absolute crazy. Do you find that that's true?
Well, divorce rates have actually fallen in the last 15 or 20 years. And I think it's because we're getting more picky about when we marry and who we marry, and more demanding about what kind of marriage relationship we want. Divorce rates have been much lower today than they were at their height in the 1970s, and they've fallen quite a bit even from 2000. But it's true that older women's divorce rates have actually increased, right. You know, not dramatically, but they've increased. And I think part of this is because they are seeing what you talked about earlier. They're actually seeing that if you're in a just unsatisfactory marriage, not even an abusive one, that you might have gone out early, that you don't necessarily have to stay in it if you can't get you guys to fix it. And you know, it's worth trying to get to fix it. But you've got, you know, you turn 50, you've got 30 in today's world. You have up to 30 active years left. Mm-hmm. And so people, men and women alike, but more women, are saying, you know, if I can't turn this into the kind of relationship I want that is satisfying to both of us, and if I can't do something with my life that is satisfying and my husband stands in the way of it, then I think I would prefer to go alone. So you're seeing that. But I think it's also really important to point out that as people marry at older ages and have become more accepting of the ideals of equality. You know, back in the 80s and early 90s, if a woman earned more money than her husband or had more education, that was a huge divorce risk,
oh,
mostly
absolutely.
Because he would be unhappy. It no longer is. Mm-hmm, we mm-hmm. are, you know, we get so pessimistic sometimes, and that right now I have to say there's a lot to be pessimistic
exactly.
about right now.
Unfortunately, sadly, yeah.
Unfortunately. But one thing we don't have to be pessimistic about is, although sometimes it's frustrating how long it's taking some people, things are changing in gender relations. Men are doing more housework mm-hmm. than ever before. They're doing more childcare than ever before. Women and men are getting better at negotiating these kinds of things. One big problem is our workforce and our support systems are not getting better at helping us negotiate and navigate these more
right.
egalitarian relations.
Exactly. Stephanie, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, I would love to know, how do you respond to critics who claim modern relationships are worse off than those in the past? So just marinate on that thought for a minute, and we will be right back, listeners. Don't go anywhere.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
Need a reliable place for your pet? Does your dog crave extra stimulation instead of social isolation? Sign up for doggy daycare at the Dog's Den in Pembroke. With two separate yards and plenty of supervision, your dog will have a ball and tug-of-war toys and plenty of new friends. The Dog's Den also specializes in grooming. Each groomer at the Dog's Den has decades of experience and will leave your furry friend refreshed and ready for their next adventure. Schedule your grooming or daycare today at thedogsdengrooming.com.
Cold shower surprise? Relax. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating has it handled. From outdoor showers and high-efficiency water heaters to boiler replacements and full kitchen and bath remodels, they bring serious skill, sharp detail, and pride in every pipe. Got a plumbing or heating problem that stumped everyone else? That's their sweet spot. Water filtration too? Yep, covered. Every estimate comes with honest pricing, clear communication, and work done the right way. No funny business. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating. Craftsmanship you can feel. Reliability you can trust. Visit StefanoNagroPlumbing.com. From first drip to final fix, done right. So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did. All right, we are back, and I'm speaking with Stephanie Kuntz. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Thanks.
So, some critics claim that modern relationships are worse off than those in the past. How would you respond to that?
Well, domestic violence is much more rare than it used to be. We have much more men and women who say that they are sharing chores and childcare and public aspirations. So I really don't think that in practice they are worse off. But I think that it can seem that way because we have such higher expectations than we did in the past.
Exactly.
You know, we're not going to settle for the kind of marriages that people felt they had to settle for. And so we work at changing them. And when that work doesn't help, or doesn't pay off, we get mad. And rightly or wrongly, we may choose to divorce. But either way, there are arguments and negotiations that are more difficult when it was just clear that a woman was completely dependent on the man for having the house and being able to feed her children. And so she was going to put up with stuff. So it's more challenging, not because we don't value marriage the same way we used to. It's more challenging because in many ways we value marriage more. We expect more mutuality,
right.
More honesty.
Exactly.
It takes work.
Something. I have a segment in the radio station Wednesday mornings where people write in about and ask questions about relationships. And a lot of the time, they're questions about the whole dating scene.
Hey, you know who went on a date the other night? Stuart.
Oh, good for him.
I thought so too.
So is she like homeless or framing him for a crime?
He's using some kind of dating app on his phone.
Oh, which one? Maybe we can get Amy to try it.
I don't know. Stuart, can you come in here? He tried to explain it to me. It shows you pictures of people nearby. You swipe them around. It looks kind of like a game.
Oh, And if you lose the game, you have to go out with Stuart.
What's up?
Can you show us a dating app?
Oh, yeah, sure. This thing has changed my life.
Wow, so how many girls have you met?
Two. I probably don't need to mention there's an entire number between that and zero.
So how does it work?
Well, it shows me all the single women in a 5-mile radius who are using the app. If I like the way they look, I hit thumbs up. If I don't, thumbs down.
What would make you give a girl a thumbs down?
First time it happens, I will let you know.
Dating apps and who pays and who, I just had this the other day. Who pays, who should I follow up with the text? I mean, these men are all confused about what to do. And meanwhile, the women have these super high expectations of what they're kind of willing to settle for. So there's a real imbalance going on. And it seems that it's really wreaking havoc, especially in that age group that we were talking about where women say, you know, if I can't have what I want, that I'm going to leave this marriage. But then they get out there and their expectations are, it's not that they're so unreasonable, it's just they have high expectations and they're finding that the men can't deliver. So that's becoming kind of a problem there. So what would you say about that?
Well, I mean, I agree it's a problem. And I think it's been greatly exacerbated by the dating sites that we've got, you know, that by the decline, you know, I make my living not romanticizing the past, but I have to say that I'm nostalgic for the decline of what some research has called third bases, places where you can meet people that you don't have to, you know, check out whether you want to meet them or not, or whether they're your marriage proposal or not. You meet them, you hang out, you find out things about them gradually that make them suddenly seem attractive in ways that they don't when they come past your screen. You know, I think one of the things that we really need to watch for is that this dating app thing and these messages tend to get you to select on the basis of two of the most unpredictable qualities there are for a relationship to work. A, how does he or she look? And B, and especially for women, what's their profession? And women, you know, men have a long way to go in understanding what their responsibilities are mm-hmm. in an ongoing egalitarian relationship. Mm-hmm. But women have to stop expecting the man to earn more money, to be able to pay more money, to have a better occupation, because that's not the kind of man who, if he is superior to you in all of those kind of economistic ways, mm-hmm. he's not the kind of man who's going to be open to you in the more spiritual relationship way.
No, I lived through that, and that was a nightmare. It really was. And my ex-husband was very successful, but I was in my own right too. But, you know, I really, when I look back, I just kind of dropped the ball. I just kind of went like, oh, I can finally take a nice, big, huge breath. You know, and at first that was, you know, I had owned a business for a long time. It was a dating service, actually, and I had sold it. And it was kind of, you know, it was fun at first. You know, I kind of could explore all these different areas of myself again. But then, you know, it really shifted into just kind of like, who am I? What am I? And it was very confusing time. So. What I do want to ask you is, Stephanie, that with the rise of non-traditional families, like the single parents, the cohabitating partners, the LGBTQ, you know, plus families, how do you see that definition of family evolving?
Well, I think that we have become more aware that family, I think what is happening is that we are valuing love relations and intimate relationships as relationships rather than institutions. I think that's a big change. Now, I don't deny that there are all sorts of problems with the fact that we don't have institutional support for the kind of relationships we want to build. Mm-hmm. But I think there are lots of issues and problems in this fast-paced, you know, devil take the hindmost climate that we've got right now that really hurt people's ability to build and sustain long-term relationships. But for the most part, I think that we have correctly raised our standards for what we want in relationships. And in fact, you know, you asked me about my new book. One of the things I'm trying to do in that new book is to explain some of the habits and assumptions that we bring to meeting people, to what makes them attractive, to what is going to work, that are actually inherited from a past that we wouldn't want to replicate.
Right.
And so how could we think that if we replicate those ways of meeting and interacting and dating, mm-hmm. that we could actually then build the new kind of relationships that most of us want, the really truly satisfactory ones where we each support each other's goals and yet also are able to work together on some shared goals. So we have all of these habits from the past, mm-hmm. and we really need to think about them. It just little things. Like one little example is we often talk about, women often complain, the ones who are dissatisfied with their marriages, about the man's learned helplessness, you know, that they'll say they want to help with the child or with the house, but then they'll ask for so much direction, or they'll do such a strange job that the woman loses patience and does it herself.
Just give me that towel. I'll fold it myself.
but yeah, exactly.
Now stop ignoring me and make me some lunch. I'm feeling pot roasty.
Make it yourself.
Myself? What are you talking about?
I'm on to you. You pretend to be a stupid ass so I can wait on your hand and foot. It's over.
Dad, you just gonna take that? 45 years, I had a good run.
But, you know, we women have a certain amount of too much learned helpfulness. And, you know, I've lectured on these issues for years.
Yeah.
And I often talk to people about women's gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. That is, we say we want the man to help, pass our test first, and he has to do it as our assistant rather than a full joint guy who has his own judgment on it. And now I've lectured on this for years and told people how destructive that we know it is for relationships. Just a few years ago, my husband caught me rearranging the dishwasher after he'd loaded it. And he says to me, why should I load the dishwasher if you're going to rearrange it? You know? And I thought, isn't that funny? Because of course he's quite right, and I could see it in other people's marriages, and I didn't even see it in my own.
Oh, isn't that funny, huh? Oh, that's funny. Oh, yeah. There's a lot. Like, give me that. I'll just do it myself. And then you hate them for it when they say, you know, and then when they get upset and say, why bother? And then you get upset. It's crazy. It's just all crazy making.
Well, I'm gonna go do the dishes.
Cool.
It'd be nice if you help me.
No problem. We'll get them a little bit later. I'm just gonna hit the streets here for a little bit.
Gary, come on. I don't want to do them later. Let's just do them now. Take 15 minutes.
Oh, honey, I am so exhausted. I just honestly want to relax for a little bit. If I could just sit here, let my food digest, and just try to enjoy the quiet for a little bit.
Get some.
That's what happens. And we will. You know, we can clean the dishes tomorrow.
Gary, you know, I don't like waking up to a dirty kitchen.
Who cares?
I care, all right? I care. I busted my ass all day cleaning this house and then cooking that meal, and I worked today. It would be nice if you said thank you and helped me with the dishes.
Fine. I'll help you do the damn dishes.
Oh, come on. You know what? No, that's not what I want.
You just said that you want me to help you do the dishes.
I want you to want to do the dishes.
Why would I want to do dishes? Why?
See, that's my whole point.
Let me see if I'm following this, okay? Are you telling me that you're upset because I don't have a strong desire to clean dishes?
No, I'm upset because you don't have a strong desire to offer to do the dishes.
I just did.
After I asked you.
Jesus, Brooke, you're acting crazy again.
Don't you call me crazy. I am not crazy.
I didn't call you crazy. No, I didn't. I said you're acting crazy.
You know what, Gary? I asked you to do one thing today, one very simple thing, to bring me 12 lemons, and you brought me 3.
God damn it, if I knew that it was going to be this much trouble, I would have brought home 24 lemons, even 100 lemons. You know what I wish? I wish everyone that was at that goddamn table had their own little private bag of lemons.
It's not about the lemons.
Well, that's all you're talking about.
I'm just saying it'd be nice if you did things that I asked. It would be even nicer if you did things without me having to ask you.
Do you see cultural storytelling, like through media and film, catching up with the realities of modern relationships?
Boy, I don't know. I'm old enough to really be stuck in the print world, so I don't do a lot of the media. But I worry because we have so many special effects and we have so many people clamoring for attention because of the rewards, whether psychological or mercenary, that they get, that there's this tendency to take things to extremes and, you know, lay out visions of what the good life is that are so unrealistic for people. So I do worry about that. At the same time, I think it's wonderful that we are getting more empathetic toward the variation in love and relationships that people may have and trying to be accepting of them. Well, we're much less tolerant of violence in any relationship than we used to
absolutely.
Be.
But
we're much more tolerant of a wide range of relationships, and I think that's good.
Fantastic. Absolutely. What changes in family structure or like gender dynamics do you foresee in the next 10, 20 years?
This is why I'm a historian.
Yeah.
I don't know how to predict the future.
That was a loaded question to ask a historian,
I will give you a kind of answer.
Okay.
I see us at a crossroads where we have so many good ideas and so many new values about how people should be treated and what our potential is to build healthy families and collaborative relationships. But we also have so many new ways to corrupt those, to distract people. And we have this new right-wing resurgence of trying to turn the clock back on many of these things.
Don't get me going there.
So I think that what you need now is not forecasters, but activists, people who are prepared to say, we need to do something that builds on the good we have accomplished and discovered and that rolls back these attempts to take us back to the 1920s,
it's crazy
19th
making.
Century it's when it comes to things like women's rights and women's birth control and abortion.
We don't want to go even down that road. We'll be on the phone. We'll be on the phone all day today, right? If you could rewrite one popular belief about marriage or family, what would it be? And part B of that question would be why?
Oh, my goodness. What a good question. I think I would rewrite it to say the idea that you're going to find a soulmate who will complete you and make you happy is a very dangerous one.
Oh, it certainly is. And women don't want to let go of that still, I'm sorry to say. I still say that. I still feel that.
Yeah, and sure, because we still were, and again, that's one of those hang-ups and leftovers from the past when women didn't have agency and you waited for the prince to come along.
Well, you know, Leslie Ann Warren in Cinderella, the Rodgers and Hammerstein play, right?
You know something?
I remember when I was in my 20s and I realized it wasn't on TV anymore. And I remember searching high and low for that. I wanted that. And I still have that VCR tape of Cinderella. And it made me think, why is this so important to me? I had to really take a good look at that. And I think there was this piece of me that wanted to be rescued by my prince. But also, you know, there was, when we were growing up, you know, and when mothers had, you know, when parents had so many children and there wasn't enough attention to go around, you know, and then the woman wasn't feeling really fulfilled and she would want the man to complete her. And then the women would suffer with emotionally unavailable fathers.
Well, and
but that's another whole tangent again, right?
But it's not a tangent. I mean, I think that it leads to the second part of what we were talking about, that you can't expect one person to fill all your needs. And, you know, not just your needs for intellectual or satisfaction or feelings of fulfillment in the work you do. Mm-hmm. You can't expect one person to fill all of your emotional needs either. Mm-hmm. And so when you say marriage, this is going to be the one person, the perfect person for me, my soulmate, my, you know, person to whom I can confide everything, that's unrealistic, and it draws you away from the things that actually support the best marriages, and that is having friendship network and interests outside the home that you can bring back to the home. Oh, it's very, when my husband and I got married, for example, maybe this is too intellectual, but when we said to the assembled guests, we're inviting you here to make a promise to you that we will not cocoon ourselves away from our networks. We want to expand our separate networks into one big network. And we promise you that we're not going to retreat from our friendships and our collaborations outside the family. And in fact, there's a lot of research that shows that your relationship is better if you have friends that you can turn to for mm-hmm. other needs that maybe mm-hmm. your partner can't do. As long as those friends are supportive of the relationship, don't see themselves as competitors for you.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that, but I would also have to say, sadly, that if I had a dollar for every friend that would not cut off, but sort of move on from the friendship once they got married, I would be a very rich woman. Because, you know, this is what does happen so often, and it's still happens. I mean, it's almost the most evolved woman or the most evolved couple that, you know, would like to do what you are saying that you would propose, but it oftentimes is not the case. It really isn't. No. You know, it really, really isn't. And women, you know, they just do. And, you know, I mean, I remember I was getting a divorce at the time, and my best friend met a guy, and I was just frantic that I would lose her. Now she is, and she's still my best friend, and she's not with him. But there was a time when absolutely, I mean, that's why she, as I said, she is my best friend because, and always will be because she didn't let go of the friendship. But it is a natural thing that well, first of all, you get the hormones going and you're just going crazy. Not just the hormones, you know, just the oxytocin, all that stuff when you fall in love. But then, you know, it can settle into an entirely other world that does leave your friendships to some degree behind.
And that's not good for your relationship.
It's not good for your relationship because, you know, something when you do that, you put too much weight on that partner giving you or fulfilling all your needs, as you had said. And then what ultimately happens is you feel like, oh, I'm missing something. And then what ends up happening is then your relationship doesn't work out.
You're not renewing. I mean, one of the things that you need to spend time with friends along with your partner, but with friends or go out and then come back. I know, I'll tell you a personal thing. My husband is very, very funny. He has a store of funny stories and he's very witty, but I've heard a lot of the funny stories. So I love him the most when we go to a party and he tells his funny stories to other people, because then I get the reflected glory, you know?
And is he your soulmate?
I don't believe in soulmates.
Because I was going to ask you about the myth of the soulmate marriage. Is it helpful or harmful in today's culture? And I personally think it's harmful. I think you can love many people in a lifetime.
You know, I am one of those people who he's the man I love first and broke up for a while. But yeah, he's the love of my life. That's true. But he's the love of my life, I think, precisely because I have other friends. He has other friends. We have joint friends. We share interests together that don't just lead us to want to go back up and be isolated on a little island. We do better we do fine when we're with each other, but we do better because we're often with other people.
Well, so you guys have got it right, right? So
well, we're trying.
Yeah, you do. Okay, we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, listeners, more to come. when you see my name on a hat, sweatshirt, a tote, that's not just merchandise, that's a vibe. I want it loud, I want it bold, and Millennium Printing Corp delivers every time. They took my vision and they made it wearable, clean, sharp, and totally me. Because when you show up looking like this, people pay attention. This is Francesca, and I don't just say it, I wear it. Big love to Millennium Printing Corp. You nailed it. Visit them at mpcprinting.com. That address again is mpcprinting.com. So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did. Cold shower surprise? Relax. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating has it handled. From outdoor showers and high-efficiency water heaters to boiler replacements and full kitchen and bath remodels, they bring serious skill, sharp detail, and pride in every pipe. Got a plumbing or heating problem that stumped everyone else? That's their sweet spot. Water filtration too? Yup, covered. Every estimate comes with honest pricing, clear communication, and work done the right way. No funny business. Stefano Nagro Plumbing and Heating. Craftsmanship you can feel. Reliability you can trust. Visit StefanoNagroPlumbing.com. From first drip to final fix, done right. All right, we are back and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. Let me reintroduce my guest, Stephanie Koontz. Big welcome back to you, Stephanie. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. It really is such an interesting conversation.
My pleasure.
So how do people typically respond when they are confronted with evidence that contradicts these deeply held myths about family or about gender roles?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and especially in terms of where we go next and how we change some of the reaction and pushback that we're getting to the modernization of marriages and other parts of and gender in our society. What I like to do is to encourage people to recognize that sometimes their people's fearful or even hostile reactions come because they have been imbued with so many myths, and that it's important to find ways to acknowledge their anxiety or their fears about what's going on and show that you're human instead of just writing people off. I think there's been a little too much of, oh, you used the wrong term on this, or I don't like what you're doing. But asking questions about what other people think, asking questions about why they're anxious, and being able to describe why you're not anxious, why you're kind of relieved that there's kind of this new freedom to go in this way. I do think we need, much more conversations like that and much more campaigns to get it across, and much less of this kind of throwing insults at each other over email.
Right. And that's always dangerous. What's a question about marriage or family that you wish more people would ask?
That's a very good question. I think it would be a question of, I wish people would just ask the question, what do we need to know about what some marriages that I disapprove of may be going through, or what some marriages that I admire may still be having struggles with. In other words, instead of looking for heroes, models that we want to live up to, or the opposite, ask, these examples of the worst possible scenarios that we want to read out of the civilization, if possible, let's just ask ourselves about the strengths and weaknesses that we're seeing and how can we build on the strengths and minimize the weaknesses. Kind of abstract, I know. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. No, I love it. So many of our listeners are supporting adult children or even aging parents. And so what's the history of the multi-generational household? And do you think it's making a comeback?
Well, to some extent it is. I don't think it's making a major comeback, but the low point of multi-generational housing was in the 1950s and 60s. And that was a period where from which we've inherited this exclusive idea about what a marriage and the nuclear family should be. There was a big, very popular show called a book and show and play called Marty, and some of your listeners may be old enough to remember it. And the whole idea was the problem was this guy allowed himself to live with his mom and his aunt, and he would hang out with friends instead of moving into a nuclear situation with this young woman. And there was a well-known psychiatrist who once told women, who advised women in his books, do not allow your aging parents or his aging parents to come live with you. Put them in a nursing home so you can devote yourself entirely to your marital relationship. That was the idea in the 50s and 60s. And to some extent, we've become better intergenerational friends, many, many parents and children and elders. And so there has been some move back. But that's not a solution, of course, to the problems, because in many ways, it just adds, you know, what turns out to be a tremendous burden on top of all of the demands of our work schedules and our absolutely family unfriendly policies. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's extremely important that we recognize that people want, I think, to help their family members if they're at least have had good relations with them in the past. But we need to not force them to do that all on their own. We have to provide support so that people can live independent lives and interdependent relationships.
Mm-hmm. As we're sort of winding down here, what advice would you give to someone in their 50s or maybe even their 60s rethinking their role in their family as a partner, a parent, or even a grandparent?
Well, you know, I'm not a therapist and I don't want to pretend to be one. But I guess what I hear most when I'm taking people's oral histories is this sort of wonderment whether one particular change in their life would, you know, if they cut off this person or got back with this person or got this done, you know, would this turn it around? And my advice, not as an expert, but just as a human being, is to widen your horizons gradually, to recognize that we are such social animals and living in an increasingly antisocial society. You know, researchers find that one of the best predictors of good moods is not just your relationship with your intimates, but it's the relationships you have with what some researchers call consequential strangers. The person you always pick up in the checkout line.
Yep.
Somebody that you talk to doing the same thing. Yep. Those interactions are so important to us as human beings, and we forget them when we order everything through Amazon and go through the, you know, automatic checkout. We're losing ways, things that remind us of our human connections and bring us home in a good mood that gives us stories to tell to our close ones and gives us just a sense that we are part of a larger community. We're not part of an isolated minority to whom everybody else is hostile.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I say this to myself all the time that, you know, when I'm thinking, oh, I don't have time this morning to walk the dog and I've got to rush out and I've got to, you know, get to the studio or whatever it might be. But you know what? I always, at the end of that walk, even if it's a shortish one, you know, I see people, we stop, We chat, and you know what? And these are just, they're not important people in my life, but they are people that I see kind of regularly. You know, I mean, it does kind of make it, I do think it does make a difference. I really do, because I find myself saying to myself all the time, I'm so glad that I have this little doggy, because I really feel like I get this interaction that is just, I don't know. I can't really put it into words. It's just it's a nice feeling. It's just a simple little thing, but you know, I really think it does make all the difference in the world. And you are so right that we are becoming more and more and more isolated. I mean, well, first of all, with COVID, that just really wreaked havoc.
That hurt.
It really did hurt. But it's not just, it wasn't just COVID. It's, you know, the internet and... You know, and I was just having this conversation this morning with a friend about how, you know, it's like you waste so much time online, on social media, but it's almost as if you're not on there, it's like... I mean, there are some interesting things that do go on, but then, you know, it's too bad you just can't like type in to social media, please, only the interesting and important things to me. And if you right? And if you could do that, it might make a world of difference, because the next thing you know, you've now wasted a half an hour on just complete crap. And
go out and like you say, go in and engage in a conversation. You know, I told my, it's interesting because I told my husband about this research that I was doing on, you know, on why these little interactions with strangers, how they show that it improves your mood, not just for a couple of hours, but even for days. So he said he started standing in lines and striking up conversations with somebody else standing in line and with the checkout counter clerk. And he said, it's absolutely true. It improves his mood every week, you know?
Mm-hmm. It really does. And it's important. So, Stephanie, as we wind down here, we just have a few minutes left. What would you like our listening audience, because we could have talked all night for sure, but what would you like our listening audience to really take away from this so profound interview?
Well, I think two things. First of all, in terms of looking at your own relationship, to step back, you know, psychologists talk about benevolent attribution and malevolent attribution. And I'm a big fan of what I call historical attribution. Look at the problems in your relationship in terms of what have they learned and what have you learned that is standing in the way of getting to what you want. And instead of, you know, saying he's doing this on purpose or beating up on yourself because I always do this, I'm such a, you know, terrible mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. saying, you know, I do this because I was trained for 150 years with the fairy tales you've been talking about, right. The social norms,
absolutely.
And let's work together to see if we can improve it. So that's what I would say on an individual level. And I think we can use the same sort of approach to some of the disagreements we're having here. I mean, there are people who clearly have bought into an anti-woman, racist, you know, anti-change of any kind. Let's go back to the 19th century. But there are a lot of people who listen to that because they know that something's wrong with this 21st century world. Mm-hmm. And the more you listen to what is wrong, you may find out that there are things you agree on that you could both work together to move forward on.
It's too bad that you're not a psychologist. You would have a great following.
Thank you.
Well, Stephanie, it's been such a pleasure, and I feel like there are just so many questions that I didn't get to ask you, and so we're going to definitely have to do this again. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I have really utterly enjoyed it, and I'm sure that my listeners have too.
Well, you raised really interesting questions and comments, so it has been a great conversation for me too. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, we've got to wrap things up and say goodnight. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. Oh, she was just so, so interesting. Stephanie Kuntz, and she has written so, so many books, and she has another one coming out. If you missed part of this show, you're going to want to go over to my iTunes page and listen there. And if the show resonates with you, please leave a review. I love all your reviews. Or share the show with someone that you think would enjoy it. And we will see you next week, same time, same place. Make it a great week. Thank you.